anybody that's on the payroll has to be here. I don't want to watch it.
GCED, October 19th.
Okay.
Not yet.
Did Judith A. Myers go to the House of Reps?
Caroline O'Day, who was a congresswoman back in the 40s.
Most women are named. I mean, at Caroline.
Caroline, they're women.
Coffee's cold.
Unlike a Leslie.
Well, they have to Carl what?
Right.
She'll get it.
You have people say Carl Lawhorn?
Yes, I know.
Wait a minute. Yes.
I did, for example.
Yes.
Obviously,
yes. At any rate, so I could do that.
You know, my mother lives in
I could, well, that's tough one. I could come up around two then. If that's good for you.
Well, you tell me what you're available, and I'll just see if I can make it work.
Yeah, around two.
2 to 4?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And what about something?
You want me to bring the doggies?
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. You have to do me a favor. We had the last meeting over here. I know he's busy. He's in charge. He's running around. But we should have gotten press and publicity on that community living and fixing up all those apartments. And, I mean, it's very important that
we...
My sister.
Ready, Bernice? Rose.
So for me,
yes or no?
One part of my mom's like whenever we're discussing serious things.
Yeah, because Sunday is probably not good for me. George Latimer and
it's hard for her.
But early?
Because you leave that.
Hi,
you know,
I'm waiting
power.
To get started, and half of these people have to leave. They have to leave, bro.
No, I wants to be in. What am I going to do?
You see the sweetener or whatever.
Yes,
he's alive.
We can start. He doesn't have to be compensated.
I mean, you want to leave, she wants to leave, he wants to leave.
You and I. We should start, and Ken can join us in progress.
Is it okay to start?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Can I please have your attention? We have a very busy meeting. So many things are coming up now, okay? We have John Cochran, okay, the Assistant Director for Intergovernmental Affairs and Strategic Planning for the New York State Office for the Aging. He's going to speak about New York State budget and how it has impacted senior programs and services. I have a few questions that I would like to preserve what we have had. We have budget cuts all over the place. We are not going to be able to have everything that we had. How we could do some of that, I have some ideas. And I just heard news now that Mike Burgess, who we all know from statewide on to working also for the state office, is going to leave. He's going to retire. He was a very good key person, contact person, and John is still there. If anybody could take his place, I know John can. I like Greg Olson. Those are people that care about seniors, okay? You could get anybody to do a job if the pay is worth it, but you have to have certain people with a heart involved in what they are doing, and you don't find those people that quickly, okay? And I feel bad about it, okay? But we will continue, we will fight, we will be there, and you have Election Day, okay? Election Day is in 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
From today. Now, we don't know what the state is going to look like. They're yelling all over the place, throw the bums out, put the new ones in, do this, do that. We shall see in 2 weeks, and then we have to deal with the same or a lot of new faces, okay? It's going to be a challenge. It's going to be a big challenge this year, and we have to meet those people. In January, I was just discussing with May that we usually have a meeting with our state assemblymen and our senators and our congresspeople. They're all invited. If they don't come, they have a problem, okay? Because we're fed up as it is, because we need to know, okay? And, you know, seniors are used to being in their own environment. They're used to having what they had, and they don't like changes. None of them. I work with them all my life. They are set. They're happy. Just help them continue to live and enjoy life. And that I intend to do with this committee and everybody else. So we are going to have a meeting the last Friday in January. Notices will go out, okay? We need people to come and fill up the county center. We are going to find out again after Election Day, and we will know who we have to call. I just wanted to give you sort of an idea of what's in store, okay? Mm-hmm. I hope the future is a rosy one. With the economy the way it is, I don't see anybody throwing down money from the skies or planting money trees around here, so I don't think we're going to have a good time or a happy time about it, but we'll be there, every single one of us, to make sure they don't forget us. If you don't come along with me and we don't get on buses or come up to the county center, they have to know you mean it, okay? They don't want to see 2, 3, 4, 5 people. You can't say, let Joan go for me or let Barbara go for me. You have to go and you have to bring people with you. So I'm getting a little frustrated, so are you. So without further ado, yes.
As you mentioned what is happening, I just want to notify the members that the Subcommittee on Hispanic Affairs and Immigration, Bernice won't be here on the 9th of November. She doesn't have to be. This is a subcommittee that we'll be meeting with a presentation from the Empire Justice Center, the Hispanic Resource Center, the Neighbors Link, Catholic Charities, and other immigration service agencies will be invited to listen to what is happening in that front, since as this committee is called Generational Cultural and Ethnic Diversity,
absolutely.
The subcommittee takes on Hispanic affairs and immigration issues, which are of concern, so we're going to bring them to the table that day, November 9th, 10:30 a.m.
Okay, we are interested in everybody, seniors, youth, Hispanic, black, everybody is our concern. We have done a good job. You've been on my committee. You've been on my committee, and Lois was, and now you are. I'm glad Judy is on board here, but it really is a matter that affects everybody, okay? And we have to work towards that, okay? I'm sorry, John. He came all the way from Albany. He's got a presentation. We're going to let him show it. Then you could ask questions, and I'll ask questions also. Yes.
For our next meeting, can we hold it for Tuesday before Thanksgiving? Because we have two major conferences on November the 16th.
Yes, okay. The 23rd.
The 21st would
that's
be
at the 23rd.
The 23rd.
And I would like to recommend the subject of the chronic disease self-care management program that we're rolling out. We're in charge of that program for the Mid-Hudson Valley. And the following week after Thanksgiving, we will be training master trainers who will go out and then train peer trainers who will then go out and train their peers.
Okay.
On how to manage their chronic diseases, which are costing the taxpayers over $1 trillion a year.
Okay, I'm sure we all want to know about it, and I'm sure we all want to get involved in seeing that the program works. As long as it's costing that much money, we have to get results. If I don't get results, I don't want the program.
Okay, well, we will be glad to make a presentation.
Okay, that's November the 23rd, right?
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
Bernice, thank you very much. I greatly appreciate the opportunity to meet you all. Bernice, as you know, I mean, is a leader as one of our leading advocates. I mean, every year she's brought up a lot of folks to Albany to make sure that the voice of the seniors of Westchester County across the state are heard. And you have an international star working, directing your state office, your local county office for the aging, Mick Carpenter. And I don't know if everyone around the table and in the audience realizes it, but you guys got some real powerhouses in the world of aging here in Westchester County. And I think that's an important thing to realize, because as things start playing out in the next couple of months in Albany, there will be a rather probably a difficult and long discussion about the allocation of resources. And that's going to go across the board and potentially can impact some of the programs that provide services to seniors. So it's going to be very, very critical to be at the table, be involved, and follow very closely what's going on. Now, as part of that conversation, we're starting to process at the state office and along with other advocates the thought of some messaging that might be useful to help, shall we say, make the point about the critical importance of providing assistance and providing services to seniors. And that's basically around a positive message recognizing the economic and social contributions of older New Yorkers. Often that's something we don't process as advocates and that we do not express, I think, sufficiently. So we wanted to get into it because the critical nature of this is that there are a tremendous amount of people who are aging in the state of New York. And as some people like to say, it sure as heck beats the alternative. So aging is a good thing, and there are a lot of people doing it in New York. We got 3.7 million people over age 60 in New York, and by 2030, that number is going to grow significantly. And that is an important thing to realize, because what that means is that there are a lot of you, and that means that there are a lot of resources that you retain, that you control. In New York, every year, $43.2 billion comes into New York through Social Security. 65% of that goes to people over the age of 60. When we hear criticisms about the long-term care system, when we hear about how much Medicaid dollars are being dedicated to long-term care, that number exceeds significantly anything that is being dedicated to serving older people in the state. And I think that's an important thing to realize. The other thing to understand is that a significant number of seniors in New York own their own homes. 72% own their own homes. Now that's a huge factor to take into account, because that means you're paying school taxes, you're paying property taxes, and you're not using a lot of the services that are being used by a great majority of individuals. The other thing to also process is that there are a tremendous amount of work that's being done by seniors, and we call it social capital. Over 143,000 older people are taking care of grandchildren in New York. I'm sorry, 143,000 children are living with their grandparents who would otherwise need placement in the foster care system. Now, as county officials, that's a big nut when you start thinking about that it costs $47,000 a year to keep a child in the foster care system. That is a tremendous, tremendous amount of money when you start processing it all together. And then the next big one is that 80% of all long-term care is provided by informal caregivers. There are 2.2 million informal caregivers in New York, saving the taxpayers of the state $40 billion a year. And the average age of a caregiver is 64 years of age, taking care of probably a person who's 84 plus. Now, when you calculate all this and you think about all the contributions that older people are making, we damn well want to keep people living in the community. We want to try to help older people live in the community and be able to live as independently as possible for as long as possible. Because we know, based on lots of research that's being done, that 90% of older people, according to AARP, want to remain in their own homes and age in place, i.e. not move. And the reason why we mention this is that Westchester County, and I'm sure many of you, you've heard many talk about what's happening and regarding the efforts to make Westchester County a more livable community. You guys are national and international trendsetters, and that's an important thing to realize. Who's that joining us over there?
Chairman Ken James.
Our chairman. Hi, how are you?
Is that
he's not moving.
Yeah, I was just like, wow.
Now he moves.
No, we still can't hear him, though.
You see, everybody's not here.
That's good. That's all right.
Touch the end of your nose, Mr. Chairman, if you can hear us.
Do they push that button from here? From
thank you. Somewhere we need the sound button turned on.
He may want it.
It was
he may want it muted. Okay, well, that's up to him.
So, you know, I wanted to make these points because, again, Westchester County is doing some great work. We hope you continue to do it and that you serve as a voice in Albany on these issues when you're talking about the importance of ensuring services for older people remain in place and continue. And as I said, this is important information to know as advocates because, you know, when we talk about the Social Security element of income that is being retained by seniors, seniors have a tremendous source of social and economic capital. The baby boomers nationally have accumulated, based on estimations that have been done by the federal government, of over $7 trillion. This age cohort, older people spend more disproportionately to their numbers on goods and services because seniors need assistance in order to live independently. They have to buy services, whether it be someone helping out with cutting their lawn, home maintenance, doing laundry, personal care services, all those things. Those are resources that go directly into the economy. And they also volunteer and support activities, not only through their service, but with financial support. And that's an interesting element. One of the things that's now starting to catch fire is this term gray gold. I don't know if anyone's ever heard that phrase. Has anyone ever heard that term of art, economic development phrase? Well, gray gold is associated with this premise of it's a clean growth industry that people are calculating is producing 3.7 jobs that are required to support a couple living in a community. And, you know, based on research and a lot of work that's being done, the graying of the U.S. population represents substantial opportunities for businesses that target their products and services to an older cohort. And there's a realization that economic development experts have been thinking through that affluent older individuals, or not even affluent, but people of moderate means or having any means, are a target because of their stable stream of income and the ability to purchase items. And you know, I like this last phrase that we pulled out of a document that you know, from a couple of states where they're, you know, we talk about the premise of smokestack chasing. Remember that? You know, basically people would be looking to retain heavy industry and heavy manufacturing jobs. Well, people are beginning now to attract looking through about retaining retirees. One of the interesting elements of this that we often, I don't think people have a real grasp on, is this: the realization of the social capital element. We often pay somewhat homage to the fact that older people do volunteer work, but I don't think folks really realize the full magnitude of what's going on. 47.9 million hours of service, you know, generating $1.3 billion. When you think about ultimately the cost of that service, if you were to factor it out and pay, pay a wage for that assistance, and there are 683,000 people who are dedicating a great deal of their time and energy to working in communities. And the other thing is that there's an interesting quid pro quo: an individual that is civically engaged tends to be healthier. They're engaged in a community. They're probably going to stay in their community, and they're probably ultimately going to be able to live independently for a longer period of time because they're engaged, they have connections to the community, they have interrelationships that ultimately help them stay in place. And this is an interesting, you know, thought when we talk about from the economic development angle, and we talk about wanting to retain seniors in the community. Often, New York is not considered to be a place where people want to stay or retire to. Because of the cold climate, being one element, and it's interesting. AARP selected places with cold winters: Boston and Milwaukee, which was kind of interesting. And although as basically top places in the country to retire to,
as long as you're a Red Sox fan, right?
Well, there you go. Well, sometimes that is that baseball is a critical thing for some people. But you know, as people were thinking about the higher housing costs and taxes, they thought that the trade-off was worth it because of the investment in the programs and services that are made available in communities. And the other interesting thing is when we talk about climate, we often dismiss New York as a retirement place. Wisconsin, I don't know if anyone's been to Wisconsin in the wintertime. Anybody?
Oh, God. Yes.
It's it's cold. They get that cold blowing wind coming down from Canada and across the plains there. It's cold. But Wisconsin has a net in-migration of people over the age of 60. And I think that's an important thing to process and to think through. And then AARP talking about the healthiest places to live in the country, Ann Arbor, Michigan, Fargo.
Yes.
Anyone been to Fargo? In
wintertime. Saw the movie.
Woo, yeah. I mean, yeah, there you go. That was an interesting movie. But, you know, it's just something to process and to think about. I think as policymakers and as advocates, to think that through, because to some point, at some point, people are always asking, why do we want to support seniors? We want to keep them in our communities. Why? Well, there are many reasons why. And the other thing here is that New York is well positioned to compete. I mean, I don't know if anyone realizes that New York State's public education system, higher education system, the SUNY system is one of the largest in the world. And then on top of that, we have over 100 private colleges and universities located throughout the state. And many are in host communities that are located near tremendous natural resources that people want to go to. They want to see the Finger Lakes, the Hudson Valley, Catskills, and the Adirondacks. Plus they have they support vast networks of health and human services that people need. And it's kind of interesting when you start thinking through about what people are saying about the importance of, for example, higher education. New York Times basically reported on some surveys that have been done that towns that have college and universities are favored retirement destinations. So New York is well positioned to be engaging this kind of a dialogue. This is interesting. Newsweek has a list of communities in New York that they think are desirable communities. Forbes magazine identified Westchester County. That's an interesting thing. Best places to grow old. And I think that speaks volumes of the work that's going on here in Westchester County. The people around the world are realizing that some of the work that's being done here is attracting attention. There is a realization about the energy and dedication that people have invested in the livable communities premises, and thanks to May and the work that you're doing, Forbes magazine and others are also thinking through that this is a worthy effort. And Bernice, and you know, through the work of the committee here and supporting this type of stuff, it's really paying off. It's paying tremendous dividends. Well, I wanted to just basically also point out what some other states are doing, because again, it's interesting to process this from the standpoint about what's going on around the country. North Carolina is doing work where basically they're providing issuance of certifications to communities that meet certain standards. Six other states, Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi, Kentucky, West Virginia, and Tennessee are also involved. The state of Ohio has done a big initiative around identifying older-friendly businesses and giving people access to to recognition through what they're calling the Golden Buckeye card that offers discounts and services to older residents. And that's been very interesting. We see a correlation of this being attempted up in New York City through the little community effort that the World Health Organization is supporting through the Academy of Medicine. And I know other communities around the state are doing this as well. I don't know whether or not Westchester is or not, but it's definitely an interesting thing to think about. In other states that are also engaged in active retiree recruitment efforts are below. That includes New Hampshire, of all places. And again, Wyoming is another major retirement destination, and some of those other states there I list. I just thought that was interesting. So, this is, again, the whole premise about thinking through about recruiting attracting retirees. This was a two pieces that we saw in the papers. State rushes toward retirees, and that was USA Today had a big piece on it. And then one of these state government advocacy papers that comes out is called State Line, and they have this whole thing about send us your baby boomers, states plead. Because again, a baby boomer usually tends to be a person who has some assets, has some capacity to remain active and to contribute to the community, and people want them. Other states recognize it, other communities recognize it, so that, you know, the reason why I keep making these points is that there is something to be said about initiatives that are designed to keep people in communities. That there is value to it, and it's the right thing to do, and other states are doing it in huge ways, and they're using it as tools to recruit people because they understand the value of a baby boomer, what they bring to the table, not only their assets, but also their social connectedness and their social capital. Folks have been writing a great deal about the premise that we need to crack the civic atom of civic engagement. And basically that premise is thinking through how do we get seniors more involved in communities because of the tremendous amount of social contributions they can make through their communities, through their service, as well as through their assets by contributing to local community organizations. So it's interesting, even the country of Mexico has made it a national priority. That just gives you some idea of what people are looking at when they look at older individuals who are active and who are healthy. They have a policy, a national economic development policy of attracting 5 million older people to the nation of Mexico. And that's one of their major pillars of their economic development platform. 5 million folks. Belize, Costa Rica, Panama is also engaging in efforts, as well as Nicaragua. So it's kind of, again, goes back to not only are other states doing it, but other countries recognize the contributions that older people make. So are we ready to engage in these types of discussions? Well, we know what the change drivers are, the demographics I shared with you. We know that there are a growing number of older people in New York. The diversity of that population continues to expand. The family structure is changing tremendously. So we know that there is a need to support families in the roles of their roles of caregivers, because what we know is happening is that for the first time there are actually more older people than there are younger people. That's the caregiver paradigm ratio, correct? That's the phrase? And as a result of that, we need to be thinking through as a state and now here at the local government level to how are we going to support these individuals as people age in place? Well, one of the key elements of that is to focus efforts and time and attention on making communities more livable. And again, in Westchester County, you guys are leading that charge. Well, one of the other big factors that people often talk about is that when we talk about long-term care, the reason why people are often focusing in on this whole reason to make communities more livable is that our current system is unsustainable. The current long-term care system is unsustainable, and we have to think through how that's functioning. And basically, Medicaid, as you can see, most of the resources are going for formal long-term care. Both nationally, New York, 27% of all Medicaid dollars in New York are going to long-term care. We spend $12.4 billion on services. These are just some of the stats. And, it's kind of interesting when we talk about also about long-term care. When a service is provided, it's a service that's being provided, but it's being provided by someone that has a job directly associated with the provision of that care. And that's another interesting element, and it's something we often don't think about when we talk about Medicaid and long-term care dollars. Those are jobs directly in communities that are supporting individuals, that are helping individuals, and it's just an interesting little tidbit to always be calculating and thinking through when we talk about Medicaid dollars and how they're being spent, because those services are being provided again by our neighbors, by our friends, by individuals in the community. It's one of the, again, interesting elements. And when you go back to the congressional record, when you look at Medicaid and Medicare and what they were saying in Congress, the vision behind that also was that Medicaid and Medicare not only were going to be providers of medical services, they were also going to be vehicles for maintaining medical systems while also helping generate the power the economies of communities. And that's an important thing to think about. So basically, Livable New York is something that we've been working on. May, through your work, everyone here, I'm sure, is familiar with it. But this is something we've been talking about quite a bit. What we're doing at the State Office for Aging is trying to replicate the models that are going on here and basically build coalitions. I mean, everyone here, I'm sure, is somewhat familiar with this, or at least the terms.
Yes, thank you.
And it's just an important thing to realize. And, these are some of the key elements. And key premise that we're trying to advance, and it's just important to realize. And this also plays against the premise of smart growth. Anyone familiar with smart growth? Ever heard about the smart growth premise? Mm-hmm. Well, smart growth is an interesting concept, and when you take and you compare the principles of livable communities and principles of smart growth, they overlap a lot. So, I mean, it does add, in some people's minds, a higher degree of credibility or a higher degree of relevance for folks when you put it within that context, because everyone's been talking about smart growth. I mean, that's a buzzword that's out there. Livable communities is also a buzzword. But for some people, government folks, smart growth is what everyone focuses in on. And again, the next two slides provide, I mean, this slide, previous slide, two slides, give you some indication of how that overlaps. So, you know, that's the end of the formal presentation, and I wanted to, you know, share that information with you, again, from the standpoint that it's important to realize that the conversations that we're having with folks and that advocates are having need to be processed within the context of being able to talk about some of the work that's being done by older people and about the economic contributions that seniors make, basically make a more compelling, I think, point that many folks don't often associate with the discussions about serving older people and helping them stay in the community, and that there is an important relevance for a community to do this, because seniors that stay in the community help maintain that community, again, through not only their social contributions through service, but also through their economic contributions. And, you know, that $43.2 billion a year number is nothing to sneeze at. And the other thing to always think about it as an advocate is that number far exceeds. You saw the number on how much Medicaid dollars are being used to fund long-term care. And people often point out that seniors eat up more resources than they give back. That's clearly not the case. And that's just with Social Security. Now, if you take private pensions and private savings, that number probably doubles, maybe even triples. And that's an important thing to realize. And so anyway, I just, again, really think that that's a, this is important information that really helps empower advocates, it helps empower individuals as you engage with public policymakers about the importance of the different things and different services that are being done are being provided through your local office for the aging. And in New York State, I work with the New York State Office for the Aging. We represent all of the county offices for the aging across the state. They are our front office in the community. They're the ones that we pass on the resources to do services to help older people. They are the front lines. The county offices for the aging are the front lines that we rely on a daily basis. And they has been an amazing partner and has provided us much assistance over the years to help us, do some interesting, innovative work. And Westchester County has always served as an innovative, an innovator in the world of aging. And that's, again, because of the leadership of May and with other folks supporting her in the county legislature. I know that kind of work doesn't happen because people are operating in a vacuum. But I know May is a consensus builder and has brought a lot of people together to understand some of the realities and some of the challenges that older people are facing. So with that being said, this information is important from the standpoint that will help you advocate, I think, more effectively, number one. And number two, we're about to enter a very difficult budget climate where this type of information ultimately might prove very useful.
Okay, before I entertain questions, I'd like you to explain, it says, I got this, I don't know how many other people have. It says New York State long-term care resource for the elderly in jeopardy, okay? It's been going around. Could you tell us what they're trying to...
Is that the AARP thing?
Yes, it's AARP.
AARP put out a press release last week talking about a challenge that we are currently facing in managing the program. It's called New York Connects. New York Connects is a county-operated program here in Westchester County. MayShop operates a program that is designed to provide information and assistance. How many people have? Is anyone familiar with New York Connects? Have dealt with it? Yeah. Okay. I mean, basically, it's designed to provide information and assistance. It's a place where people can go for information and assistance about long-term care services. New York Connects was established as a result of work at the federal level to support states in their efforts to help enhance people's understanding of what their options are in the long-term care system. Because of the current budget situation, there is some concern over how this program will continue functioning. And AARP put out a press release expressing their concerns about the future of this program. and whether or not you know, calling on the governor and calling on us to basically continue efforts to ensure it's functioning. And you know, it would be wonderful as you guys engage in your discussions and think through, you know, any help you could give us would be appreciated, because we know this is a very important program. Again, you know, from the premise that an educated consumer is our best customer. I mean, the thinking is that, you know, individuals, when they're making a selection about long-term care, ultimately do it during a time of crisis. I don't know if
this is about the donut hole, though.
Well, that's another document. Basically,
oh, isn't that the document?
No, no, no.
Oh, sorry. That's another conversation.
To pay for information assistance, our telephone line. As a matter of fact, we now answer our phone. New York Connects, the Westchester County Department Senior Programs and Services. Our primary concern is that they're withholding the money that was allocated for this year. We've been spending that money paying for staff that we won't get reimbursed for if they don't release those funds. The state is holding
You are giving, you are helping these people, giving them information, telling them what they could best use in long term care, what's good for them, and all.
Right.
And they're holding back your money, and you've been spending it.
If I'm correct, the state is withholding the New York Connects money for the current program year.
No, not connected to 211.
No. But for the current program year. Oh yeah, a lot of information on our website in English and Spanish. Are they releasing the funds?
We're engaged in negotiations with the Department of Health and others, because this is a jointly administered program. And you know, I appreciate the opportunity to kind of talk about this, but I mean, it's a challenge for us, and this is a key program for us from the standpoint that, you know, the federal government has really been looking towards this program as a way of helping stimulate conversation at the local level around long-term care reform. And it all starts with this understanding that we are trying to encourage individuals to get information, get assistance, because when people are making decisions about long-term care, they go to the point in the system that they're most familiar with. And it might not be the most cost-effective or most efficient way for them to get served to help them stay in the community. And we're confronted with a difficult situation, and we're trying to, you know, work through that. But I wanted to call that to everyone's attention, and it would be great, you know, sharing that maybe with Mr. Williams, your county legislator, who's working on with NYSAC.
Bill Ryan. Close.
Yeah. Irish name, not even close.
William. So you got part of it.
There you go.
Oh,
I had the opportunity to meet him out in Buffalo, and we had a chance to chat, and I heard that he'll be taking over. This would be something to run up through the ranks. So, but I greatly appreciate the opportunity to address that. And again, you know, it's about resources. You know, we're going through a difficult cycle where we're trying to work within, you know, a cash ceiling and off the county. If you guys have those kinds of conversations, when you have an appropriation and then you have actually what's behind that in terms of cash, that's part of the conversation and trying to work our way through it. But from our standpoint, you know, we're working to help ensure that this thing will continue, but it's gonna, you know, going forward, I think, you know, any assistance in terms of, you know, advocacy statements or you know, words of wisdom that you share with folks about a human service agenda, including the settlement, would be greatly appreciated.
Okay, I'll give this to Bill. And tell him to take it up with the counties, and you...
I have to go, but I just had one thing.
Go ahead.
This is a great presentation, and I'm going to make sure that we have a very active, livable community, South Shore area. The one thing that we constantly keep coming back to, and I think it's terrific and great to be able to say how valuable it is to keep seniors... The one thing, and you can even look at the states that are trying to lure our seniors away, is that the cost of living is a lot less there than it is, especially in Westchester County. And what, even though seniors may not be utilizing the public schools any longer, the portion of tax that goes to the schools is so frighteningly large that this, until New York State can figure out how to pay for its public education not out of our property taxes.
That's a good point.
In West, especially in Westchester County. We are never, we can try to lure as much as, until the cows come home, but you still have to find a way to get over that huge hump.
Well, the real property tax issue is something that's always, you know, a thing you hear about all the time. I think the conversations regarding the tax cap and, you know, trying to, you know, recalculate how taxes are going to be set, I mean, that's a very intensive conversation. That's not one that, you know, I think, you know, at this table is something that can be resolved, but it's part and partial of the conversation.
No, but I think it might help to get the New York State Office for Aging more involved in saying, move that public school burden.
Well, we have the highest out-migration per capita of our 65-plus population than any other county in this country.
Now, and Westchester, a lot of it relates to that.
That's right. And Westchester has approximately the same population as Fairfax, Virginia.
Exactly.
And they have one taxing district.
Yes.
Istanbul.
Yes.
That's divided between Asia and Europe. One taxing district. We can't get communities that are right across the street from each other to consolidate garbage pickup, anything. So
police.
that's an interesting thing.
And so until we the citizens start, you know, moving toward consolidation.
But maybe if we start taking a look at it on a statewide basis, taking a look at it from a senior citizen point of view, from all these different offices all saying the same thing.
Well, they talk about that, you know, retaining retirees, the social capital, the intellectual capital that's leaving.
And you
talk to the 65 and 70-year-olds here in Westchester County, 63, 62-year-olds, everybody's talking about, where are you moving?
Exactly. And I think the AARP thing about it's not necessarily weather-related, especially with global warming, we're all going to get warmer.
But we did lose.
But, you know, I mean, it's taxes.
Of our population that left Westchester County, the senior population, 22% moved upstate.
Right, but it's taxes.
And they move upstate, and that's the interesting thing.
It's crazy.
Like, for example, like Elmira. Who would ever think? Right. Yeah. Elmira's had a tremendous amount of success in attracting these But again, you go back to Forbes magazine. I mean, Forbes is going out there and marketing Westchester County as a livable place and as a place where people should consider retirement.
If you're in the Forbes 500.
Right. But then again, when you do other research, New York Times talks about it. All these places talk about it. The tax issue is always going to be
Can I just ask May or you, talking about taxes, I remember, I'm from Yonkers, which is one-fourth of the county. If a senior citizen lived in an apartment, I don't know about the rest of it, but in Yonkers, it called me, I was the council person, complained that her husband died, she's not getting the income, she can't afford to stay in the apartment. The city of Yonkers froze her rent right then and there, and the city paid for part of that. Do they have anything like that? But is that just rents? They don't do
it. It's rent control buildings where if a senior is in a certain income, and when their lease is due, they can get their rent frozen, where they won't get those increases. They don't reduce it. What it does is
it's freezes it. I know. Yeah, yeah. But is that just in apartments? They don't have that with people who live in a house that can't pay any higher taxes.
You have Enhanced Star. You have Age All. The Age All Star. I mean, program. And that is a great reduction.
Right. Well, we got to watch that they don't touch that. Also, I just wanted to ask you a question. We're looking for money somehow, okay? Is there a possibility that New York State or that we should talk to we'll have to wait until the election, our state senators or assemblyman, that the EPIC program, which is New York State, okay, any savings derived from the EPIC program, could it be set up in a trust fund for senior services like ISEP and home-delivered meals, or, you know, like, could we do something like that?
Well, I think, it's kind of interesting, and thanks for bringing that up, because that's something, an idea that periodically gets raised. And basically, the EPIC program, the Elderly Pharmaceutical Insurance Coverage Program, do you have anybody on EPIC here?
Anybody have EPIC here?
What's the EPIC program? Well, basically, it helps individuals between, above the Medicaid level and up to $50,000 a year, helps them with, it basically it helps low and moderate income seniors with the purchase of their prescription drugs. And this program was designed back in the mid-90s to, basically assist older people with understanding that, folks were struggling with having to fill prescriptions, and the government thought through how we might be able to assist them, and voila, we had the Elderly Pharmaceutical Insurance Coverage Program. Now, as time has been going on, the program has been marching forward with different things that are happening at the federal level, with increased rebates, basically pharmaceutical companies, because when they're doing business with the state of New York, because of the volume of business, they have to give the state a rebate. In other words, they have to give them a discount, and they give the state a direct payment. But some of those resources can be used to offset the operating, the state dollars that are going into the program. And what some people are saying, since a lot of the programs that are operated by the State Office for Aging target low and median income seniors as well as people who are above those levels, but to think through that program, that's who it's designed to meet. If the funding for that program is going to be reduced, then those dollars should be dedicated to helping seniors stay in the community and live independently. That if it's been dedicated for a service that's designed to help seniors purchase their drugs, and that program should, those dollars should continue to be used to fund senior services. And so that some people have been talking about taking any savings that are derived from EPIC and putting it into a trust fund, into a lockbox that would be then dedicated towards senior services. So basically, it could be used, we would hope, if this ever came to fruition, to support ISIP, CSC, CSI, home-delivered meals, all the things that May's operation does on a daily basis. So.
But we, in other words, we can't do that.
It would have to be something that would have to be done at the state level.
At the state level. So if we go to your meeting and we write up something, okay, and send it to each one of the assemblymen and from New York and the state senators from New York saying we would like them to fight for that, to put that on, I mean, you could get some money. There is savings.
I think, again, that the population of people who are served by EPIC is very similar to a large percentage of the population that are being served through Office for the Aging programs. And so, again, the dedication of resources, state resources, for one purpose, that if those dollars are going to be reduced for that one purpose, that it should stay in the field of aging. Because we know there are more older people, that number continues to grow, and we want to make sure that those services remain available.
Okay, but there's only one problem in my mind. Okay, wonderful. I think we should do that while we can, but you got to watch, like I said, you have to watch that they don't take away the STAR program, and you have to watch that the state say, well, I could save $7 to $11 million I want to get out of the EPIC program. Let the federal government take it over, and then we won't have it.
Well, that's always a challenge, but we also realize that there is a strong political, there's also a strong level of support for EPIC.
Right.
And I think it would be difficult to see that program fall off the map, but there also is a realization that there are savings that are constantly being generated by tweaking program administration, changing the way they go after rebate dollars. Anybody ever heard of J-codes? J-code is the code that they use for when they seek reimbursement from a pharmaceutical company for a rebate. J-codes are basically pharmaceuticals that have a medical procedure associated with their with their administration, for example, a needle stick or some type of a procedure that the physician has to engage in, for example, a time-release medication that's implanted under the skin, things like that. Up to this point, the state hadn't been reimbursing, hadn't been seeking rebate dollars from J-code drugs because there was a physician procedure involved, and the thought was, the pharmaceutical that was used was an afterthought. Well, now we're collecting rebates on that. I mean, there are little things that happen every year, and that happened last year. There are always little things that happen periodically around program administration that give the state a level of savings. And so whatever is put on the table, we'll know when the executive budget comes out what those elements are going to be. But every year for the last 10 years that I've been around, there's been some type of cost savings associated with how that program is functioning.
Well, it's worth a try. We can do that.
Well, one county saved over $6 million by just having their retirees get their drugs, their medications from Canada. Now, the government couldn't do it, but individuals can re-import. And they saved over $6 million in one county upstate somewhere.
Near Canada.
Just by having the retirees re-import their medications from Canada rather than buying them through the retirement system.
Well, that's something I know Reverend Diaz talks about quite a bit. It's something that, you know, I don't feel comfortable talking about because I just don't know all the implications of it. I know there were some concerns that were raised, but I think in terms of, you know, something to talk about on a legislative day, the premise of a trust fund for senior services, I think, you know, it would be an interesting conversation.
Okay.
The lottery.
Wow, I mean, you've talked about
Pennsylvania
that. You've talked about
Pennsylvania
that.
Has the lottery.
You've talked about
and it
that.
Pays for all their long-term care services. This is the
Philadelphia has it too.
It's part of the Pennsylvania lottery. They support their senior services from a senior citizens lottery.
Yeah.
And they raise.
They pay for everything.
Now this is the first year I understand that they won't be able to give raises. But they've been able to give raises every year and increase services. So. But it's a dedicated lottery just for senior citizens.
I mean, that's another thing. I mean, that's another approach.
We tried that. Didn't we try that?
I gave it to Diaz, and his office was supposed to do
99% of the lottery tickets are bought by seniors.
Well, I mean, that's the other part of the equation. What does it do to the
lottery? They say it's supposed to go for education, but we don't see where it's helping us with our property taxes. Right. Right.
What do you think of the Medicaid pool trust?
Medicaid pool, I mean, you're talking about Medicaid estate and trust issues?
Well,
they're interesting. I mean, when you talk about, you know, numbers that, in terms of savings that would generate, having been in the legislature during budget negotiations, be seeing some of the targeted savings associated with it, that estate and trust work doesn't really take that much out of the system. I mean, there is, you know, the dollar value assigned to changing the estate and trust laws in terms of how they're designed doesn't really give the big, you know, the big savings that everyone believes it to be based on DOB projections. There might be a lot of work that people see going on in communities to encourage people to do the estate and trust game, but in the end, people just, I mean, the numbers just don't prove it out, that it's not that substantial, which is interesting. You know, part of what people say is that, you know, in New York, if people are going to get around this, they're going to find an attorney. If you're wealthy enough, you'll figure out a way to get around it. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's always part of the game. We now currently have a five-year look back. We now have something looking, you know, at home and community-based services. I think that argument to, you know, basically paint seniors as folks who are trying to game the system and their families trying to game the system, I don't think it's, you know, I don't think it's, and that's how it's portrayed. And it's just, I think it's a red herring that people throw out. And, you know, there's also an intergenerational aspect to that approach that, you know, again, seniors are taking more out of the system than they're giving back. And when, again, you look back at that number on Social Security, the amount of money coming into New York through Social Security, private pensions, and individual retirement, it far, far exceeds what people are paying, what government does in terms of the service, in terms of finance and Medicaid. I mean, it's almost triple, maybe quadruple, what people, older people are paying into the system. So, you know, I think I don't think it gives people really, I don't think it gives government really a significant number of savings that people think that they're going to get through that. And I think it's a dangerous approach. Because again, you know, part of the other thing is that when we talk about transferring wealth to some extent, I mean, what we're kind of creating now by going after that and thinking it through as a bad policy, what are we doing to the next generation? I don't know how many of you have thought through maybe helping your grandkids, helping your child buy their first house. I mean, we will basically take out of the system a significant amount of assets that are out there by really aggressively going down that path that right now is creating new wealth in the system. It's part of like this whole very, very interesting public policy area that I don't think a lot of people have thought through and don't fully realize the implications when you start thinking through about the transfer of wealth in the United States. And in New York, I enjoyed some assistance from my family, paying for college education, paying for my wedding. It's been very interesting to watch some families how they deal with these types of things. But, you know, supposedly when DOB does the projections and people think through, because there is a way to recapture wealth that people are inappropriately taking action to hide, and that's through the court system. Anyone that's doing that, and there's a DA that wants to go after them, all they have to do is file a motion, and that person's in court. Now, do judges do that? Do they take that kind of action? They don't. Could they do more aggressively? Absolutely. So the mechanisms are in place. It's a matter of government using those functions, and do people have the desire to actually go forward and do that kind of work? I don't know. They might not have the stomach for it, but the mechanisms are in place.
All right. Any people have questions that they'd like?
I have some comments and some questions.
Go ahead.
I didn't talk about it, Christine, is that we rolled out the school system, but we do, because a lot of us are raising down grandchildren and we're sending them to school.
Sure. I mean, a lot. 143,000 kids are living with their grandparents, yes. But, you know, we got 3.7 million older people in the state of New York. So I know that that's a significant number. When you add up, when you do the math, $47,000 is the average cost in the foster care system,
yes,
times 143,000. You get 47 million? It's a lot.
But how much are they giving the grandparents who are saving the taxpayers at $47,000?
Well, nothing.
They give us nothing.
Very little. Very little.
So we're impoverishing grandparents who are taking care of their grandparents.
And they're taking the programs back that they gave to the grandparents.
You're talking about the kinship.
Right.
The kinship is the program, the assistance program.
The money that they gave us, they're taking back up their bank. That program is no longer for the grandparents.
And that was designed to provide support to the families, to grandparents taking care of the grandkids. It didn't provide you with a subsidy.
No.
It provided assistance and information about what the options are, working through the school systems, dealing with, you know, the complications that, you know, an older person has to deal with in order to help raise a grandchild. In my previous life, I was a lobbyist, and one of my clients was the Federation of Prostate and Welfare Agencies. And this was a major issue for us. And one of the things that did happen this year that's going to be helpful, I think, to a lot of grandparents is the kinship guardianship program, where basically a subsidy will be made available for the first time.
Not to the ones they already had.
Exactly. I mean, that's part of the problem. Going forward, though, there's this potential assistance that will be made available.
So what about this on the county level? What about that $350? Is there any way that could be given back to
you? What was that again?
The $350 on the county level. If that's any way that could replace that?
I'm not familiar with that.
What is it, May?
From the Department of Social Services.
You were getting it from Social Services?
It came from the Department of Social Services.
And then they've eliminated that in the Social Services budget.
Well, may I speak to that for one moment?
Sure.
We're hoping that that won't be eliminated, but it's a discretionary funding, so we don't know. They did eliminate camp stipends, which affected many children in Westchester. The caregiver couldn't request funds for the child to go to camp, so they didn't get the respite, and the child didn't have something meaningful and supervised to do.
They took away the camp? How did the camps, going to camp?
Well, that was a discretionary item as well.
Did the state do that, or did the local?
The county. We're very fortunate to have support from the Department of Senior Programs and Services, as well as from the Department of Social Services. That isn't in other counties, to be honest about it, but that was one thing that they were very responsive to the caregivers' needs, to provide a camp stipend, and we had that for about 5 years. It was wonderful. So this time we had a lot of kids that kind of have no sense.
We'll have to go after the private
Absolutely.
Industry
Absolutely.
To do that kind of,
I mean, these big corporations and stuff should do that for the kids.
They should form public-private partnerships.
Ultimately.
Public-private partnerships with grandparent programs. Mm-hmm. We use our 501c3 to raise monies for school supplies for grandparents. We really should form a public-private partnership for grandparent. Cost of grandparenting.
Anybody else? I can't see. Anybody else have anything that they would like to ask? You know what? There's something that, the Office for the Aging, plus the education, I'm talking on the state level, whereas a lot of seniors that you want to stay in the community, if they gave juniors and seniors, in high schools and colleges, or ones that want to go into college, credit, letters or stuff like that, to clean somebody's driveway if it snows, to cut somebody's grass, they can't do it, they're old, they can't do it anymore. Kids don't, they'll say, why should I do it? But if there's an encouragement, if the education in the state offers something to help these kids get into college, towards the college of their choice, saying, I did this, I cleaned the snow, I picked up, I cut the grass, I went shopping, they couldn't get out in bad weather, or they couldn't get out, or something like that. Something should be done, and that would keep a lot of the seniors in place in their homes. But you don't blame the kids. They have homework, they have other things, they don't want to do it. But if there's an incentive, and this will help them, they should do that. Go to the high schools and tell them.
I can't say how many calls I get every year when it snows.
Yeah, because they can't clean. They can't turn around. They can't get up their driveway.
My next door neighbor had an asthma attack and went to the hospital and died of a heart attack, 52 years old, shoveling the snow, and had three teenage boys in the house.
Well, then she should have insisted they have.
I mean, they should be a three boys.
I think that, that's something that I think a lot of people are beginning to look at. I know, the chancellor in higher education is looking to do that at the college level. And I think at the local level, this morning Mike presented at a group, the New York State Conference of Mayors. And I can't tell you how many mayors of local towns, basically, we had like five of them stand up, basically saying, like, look, one of our biggest concerns is what happens to older individuals in terms of maintaining their property. Basically, they were talking about the difficulties, the political difficulties that are created by older people not shoveling their walks in front of their houses, because in many communities, it's a violation. It's a code violation not to shovel your walk.
That's right.
You get a ticket. So basically, a code enforcement guy's walking by, and it's like ticketing an 80-year-old, a couple that's 80 years old, and it's like, you got to be kidding me. And so the political fallout was so extreme. These guys were like thinking through. Mike Burgess was doing the presentation. I'm like, Mike, you got to help us out. You got to think through something here. Because we're talking about livable communities, and we talked about community service and civic engagement. And then thinking through, can you just basically think through a model that might be just help us deal with this such a simple little thing, because of the political headaches these mayors were experiencing. And not only was it about snow, it was about cutting the lawn.
That's what I said. Leaves, bag leaves.
Cutting your lawn. You can get a code violation for that in many communities. And so what we recommend is they go to their public schools and make it part of a service requirement, that schools start implementing a service requirement as part of their graduation.
So many of them do. They volunteer at the Office for the Aging.
Yeah. Well, volunteer their backs. Some schools are
it's funny. Some principals require community service projects. Yeah. Others, they don't have a citizenship and civic building classes anymore. It used to be that you had to do those things.
It's a great experience for young. I had two young men from Fordham. They were seniors in Fordham, and they delivered meals. And it was a great experience for them. Sure. The father told me,
if they actually liked it, they looked forward to doing it every Sunday.
Sure.
You know, it was very touching to them.
Was it charitable?
Well, or even kids that are in trouble.
Sure.
Let's say they stole something. Community service, okay, where the police could say.
One of the ways of implementing something like this, and it's been very successful, and the city of Albany is about to do it, and there's been other cities around the country that have utilized the concept of a time bank.
Yeah.
Time banking, where you use basically it's a platform for keeping track of people's volunteer service, and it's based on the pay it forward principle. You do something, basically somebody else will benefit, and then hopefully you'll be able to benefit from someone else's assistance. So the model in the school system would be seniors, kids in the schools helping seniors, then the seniors engaged, you know, who are capable in some type of volunteer activity, whether it be mentoring, whether it be, you know, teaching someone to learn to drive, whether it be, you know, helping, through babysitting of kids in the family, whatever. But there's, you know, all kinds of different permutations that it takes. And one of the things that it shows very successfully is that it helps reduce violence in the public schools. It helps kids who do bad things to basically soften up and to understand that they have a role and they have a responsibility as a member of a community to do good things and to do good works. And it kind of creates, though, a vehicle for keeping track of all the different things that people are doing, and basically, you know, has a nice way of kind of.
It's like the Eagle Scouts and the awards. It's the same thing. Mm-hmm. How many kids are so proud that they got their Eagle Scout award? When they also want a job or something, it helps.
It's a reference.
It helps. It's a reference.
Actually, the model is.
But the idea is, we're working with seniors, and education is working with education. And when I started, how many years ago, Kathy, we had a lot of intergenerational activities between kids and seniors. Okay, we were part of it, you know. And then all of a sudden, it's not around as strong as it was.
Well, the mayor of the city of New York is looking at doing time banking for people of all ages. There is a time bank in New York that's being run by visiting nurses down in New York City, and you know the information about that and how that's playing out are all over the web. If you just type in time banking New York City, you'll see the hits and you'll see how it's being utilized. And basically, it's serving as an effective way of helping older people stay in the community by hooking them up and linking them, and you know, it also creates bridges, the intergenerational,
right,
deal with intergenerational dynamics. And you know, what we're experiencing now with the discussions around Social Security, I mean, some people are looking to pit older people against younger people. It's intergenerational warfare, some people use that expression. And it's being done very intentionally with the thought that seniors don't give back to their community, they don't contribute. When you look underneath the hood, that's totally false. And people don't realize that they don't have a handle on information, and that's a part of why we do this presentation. And so people understand, that older people who are advocates understand really what they bring to the table. And we could all say, you know, we hear about political platitudes about all the, we love our seniors, but when the rubber hits the road, you know, people need to really get the basics one-on-one of what this stuff means. And that means people, keeping older people in communities means that there are resources that continue to come in. Social Security is a steady stream of income. It ain't going anywhere. I mean, people make all kinds of comments that Social Security is going to disappear. Well, believe me, some of the best minds of the country are thinking through how to retain it and how to make sure that it remains something that will be there for way into the future. So, but it's really, a critical way to process basically your role as an advocate, and to think through ways to help advance the premise that, yes, it is worth investing resources into working with older people to keep them in their homes and in their communities so that they continue in their role, okay, serving as folks that are doing work on through community service and supporting service opportunities, while at the same time contributing economically to the community.
Right. Well, November 16th, we're holding the New York State Intergenerational Associations Conference here at Manhattanville College. It's going to be at Manhattanville College, November the 16th. And they will be coming up with legislative suggestions and ideas that can be passed on how we can improve intergenerational programming here in New York State.
Right. I'd love to come to that. November 16th.
Well, anyway, I want to thank everybody for coming. I want to thank John for your presentation. The next meeting for the Hispanics is the
November 9th,
okay? And we have ours November 23rd, May?
November 23rd, yes.
Okay. And we'll get what's the date of the last Friday in
December? Last Friday in January.
The 28th, it was said. I don't have a calendar in front of
okay.
me.
Okay. If the last Friday is January 28th, that's when the meeting is. And the people with the grandparents, when the legislators are there and all that, get one or two people who speak well to get up and say, we don't mind helping our kids. We don't mind helping our grandkids. We don't mind doing what we have. But we're saving you money, so you got to help us because we can't do it ourselves. That's it. Okay? I would suggest that you people come.
Okay.
She's looking at
January 28th.
Okay. But you know, but get an agenda and let two people speak that could speak for everybody.
November 16th is the nice sign.
Thank you. And thank you for coming.
We'll send it to you.
Okay.
I'll be there. I can do that.
All right. I'll make a motion. I'm here myself.
I'll make my own motion.
Okay. I make a motion to